encarar uno contra uno, centra Marcelo Ronaldo.
¡Ahí va! ¡Ahí va! ¡Ahí va!
¡Qué chilena! ¡Qué vuelo! ¡Del cañón de Gales! ¡Gareth Bale! ¡Golazo!
¿De quién?
¡Marcó Gareth Bale! ¡Marcó el cañón de Gales! ¡En Kiev! ¡Real Madrid 2! ¡Liverpool 1!
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
For what is probably the last time this season.
Yes.
Yeah, this is going to be the last regular podcast of 2017-2018. Yes. And what a season it's been in football.
You say that every season.
Yeah, but this one has really been a good season. Yeah, there's been plenty for us to talk about, which is great, because this is our, 36th of the season. Still, after all this time, we can still find stuff to talk about.
It's because football's so great.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And we pace ourselves, you know, we keep ourselves trim and fit, and we know what the seasons are like though these days, and so we don't hit the ground too hard, we just leave it good pace.
Yep, yeah. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly. You know, and here we are, still standing, no hamstring problems.
No.
You've still got that niggling Achilles problem,
haven't
you? But you're going to have surgery for that in the summer.
That'll be fine. I waited till the summertime for my surgery. I'll miss the World Cup, but that's okay.
Yeah, I've got my hernia to sort out, but that's fine.
But we don't want to hear about that.
I'm just fed up of popping it back in every few days.
No one wants to see that either.
Well, it's a good job this is a podcast then. But hey, yeah. Videos next season, who knows?
YouTube channel next season.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great week though. Good final in the Champions League, wasn't it?
It was a cracking final. Mm. It was one of the best finals has it ever been.
Yes, yeah.
It was more of a soap opera than a football match, though, wasn't it?
It was drama, wasn't it? I woke up early this morning, went downstairs, turned on the television, and I noticed that they were replaying the game on BT Sport, and I'd only missed the first 5 minutes. So I sat and watched the game fresh, so to speak, because I was with you, Graham.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah,
in stately Sound of Football Towers, but I'd had an awful lot of gin and pims.
Yes,
and was then to go on to have an awful lot more gin and pims. So I was in a fairly emotional state watching the game, and of course I was completely blanked out by anything else. I was completely secondary to the incidents.
Yes,
to the many incidents and many profound incidents that happened in the game. But I watched it back, you know, with a cooler head. And it was very, very clear to me who the best team was, and that was Real Madrid. In spite of all of the stuff that happened, it's very clear that Real Madrid were the better team. Totally deserved that.
Yeah, and what I think is a shame is that it'll be partially remembered because of Bale's brilliance, but it's also remembered for Karius's mistakes, which is a terrible thing to remember the final four, because there were such positives in it. Well, certainly Gareth Bale being the main one, but it's sad that we are going to have to obviously go through and talk about the Karius incidents, but it's a shame it'll be remembered for that.
And the top three of people who the final will be remembered for, we've got Bale and we've got Karius, and where does Ramos sit on that podium?
It's a tough one. There's a cigarette paper between them in terms of talking points.
Yeah,
Ramos certainly played his part in this game, and not anything else, because he played really, really well. I mean, he's a really good football player. He's a ball-playing centre-half, and he's really, really good.
Didn't commit a single foul.
Well, that's not true. He did.
He committed
a number of single fouls. But the referee didn't. But this is why he's so good, is his capacity for high-quality shithousery. And I mean, by personally, I think, I mean, if we can cut to it now, I think he crossed the line with Salah.
Certainly, he is.
If any football supporter of any football club would be delighted to have Ramos in their team, including Liverpool. And you're fooling yourself if you don't, don't think so. But yeah, I mean, apropos the Salah incident.
Well, let's talk about that, because Salah had an energetic game up to that point and was part of pretty much everything that Liverpool were doing well in the game. And obviously there was the coming together, which we'll call it for the moment, and after which he had his arm pulled out of his socket and then had to go off in tears.
Mm.
Now, I've seen that replay a number of times. I'm clear, as far as I'm concerned, what happened there.
Mm. Well, he landed on his other shoulder, didn't he? They pulled down, so I don't know whether his arm was pulled out of his socket, but certainly he fell over onto his other shoulder and the whole body weight went onto the other shoulder.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was all because of what Ramos did. I mean, grabbing hold of him, pulling him down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was extremely reckless.
And like a judo throw, really, wasn't it? Yeah. It was very, very similar to that.
I mean,
using your body weight and leverage against someone.
Using the dark arts to take out a player.
Yeah.
And a dangerous player in a game like this is something that you would expect to do. But I think all professionals should reasonably understand that, you know, there has to be a line drawn.
Yeah.
And to, you know, take someone out of a game full stop, I think is over that line. And then obviously with the World Cup round the corner, I mean, I think he really has. I think he's gone too far with this one. And although I understand that it's a bit shrill, but I'm disappointed that the referee didn't spot it and that nothing was done. And I'm sure nothing will be done. But it is worth stressing that in every other respect, he had an absolutely fantastic game.
Yes. The fact that the referee, or there doesn't seem to be any talk of repercussions coming after the game for him, because the incident wasn't seen, but obviously it was on camera, would suggest to me that even if VAR had been there, nothing would have happened. Do you think?
It's a difficult one to answer that because you never know what's going to happen with VAR.
Yeah.
Because, as we've said, it is still open to somebody else's interpretation of what they've just seen. I wonder whether, because it's the end of the season and everyone's just kind of gone, well, we'll just put the season to bed and move on, whether if it was a high-profile fixture at the beginning of the season, whether something else might have been done retrospectively.
It's also possible to not break the laws of the game while still behaving dangerously.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering whether or not maybe if a referee was to look at that and say, well, actually, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't have given a free kick for that. Because it might have been regarded as a coming together.
The Football League incident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I've seen people defend that challenge on Twitter.
Yeah.
And not even Real fans. I've seen people say, well, you know, you can't prove that he did that. Or look, Salah locks arms with him first.
Mm.
That's one I have seen going around. And I think, really, if you are looking to defend the challenge, you can certainly find enough to satisfy yourself. But it still doesn't change anything for me. I look at him, and I'm going on his previous record. But yeah, that's how people are judged.
Well, we're not referees, so we can.
Yeah,
we can allow ourselves to be subjective.
And I'm sure other referees would have done if they'd seen the incident for what it was, and if they'd looked at it in slow motion as well, they might have had a look at it and think, actually, you're off the field from now because...
Yeah, there is that, but there was no VAR. He saw it in real time. He saw two players coming together very, very quickly. And, you know, he can only go with what he saw, really, can't he?
Yes, we can. Oh. Yes, but hey, Ramos will be playing with VAR for the first time during the World Cup.
This is true.
And he'll be with a lot of referees who are playing with VAR for the first time during the
absolutely.
World Cup.
Yeah, so there's going to be... fun and games
so
there.
We'll see how he gets on there. And, of course, there is the potential of a Spain-Egypt second round match as well.
Well, that would be... I mean, if Salah is not... I mean, if it's a broken shoulder... I know he's saying he's going to be back, but I don't know, man. I mean, that's a hard thing to come back from.
Yeah, if it's broken, if it's a dislocation, then he's got every chance of getting back. Mm. But, I mean, there's going to still be a lot of swelling to go down before today and then.
They have very good drugs.
They do.
Don't say drugs.
Yeah, well, they have very good legal drugs, so they're anti-inflammatories and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they'll do their best. I'm sure Liverpool will do their utmost to help the Egyptian FA. I think if that happens and Spain and Egypt play, then Ramos is going to have to watch his back. It'll be him who's the marked man.
Yeah.
And goodness knows what will happen if the Bulls contrive to bring Real Madrid and Liverpool into their Champions League group next season.
Yeah.
then I think that it would be best if he didn't get on the plane. he's in for some tough times if that happens.
I don't know if you've seen this as well, but there was another incident in the game that a lot of Liverpool fans have focused on as well.
Yes.
There was an incident very, very early in the second half where it appeared that Ramos deliberately collided with Karius.
Yes, and you can see the footage of that. Our good friend Andy Rockall, who is a listener, a one-time presenter of this show, and a referee, pointed out on Twitter that Virgil van Dijk pushed Ramos in the back, which then led to him falling into. And that this has not been picked up. And then I looked at the clip again, and sure enough, there it was. So it was a little bit like that kind of Laurel and Hardy thing that went around there. So I was like, well, it's funny because it was there before, but I didn't notice it. Because, of course, you're looking for what people are telling you to look for. So, yeah, I mean, that is something to consider as well, is, you know, whether or not that was a deliberate thing. But, I mean, of course, yeah, I mean, shit goes down in penalty area. And so I'm not quite certain whether or not you can pin that on Ramos. I don't like defending him in this moment, but because, you know, I do think he crossed the line. But at the same time, I do think that there's some wisdom in being cooler about this whole thing and not getting quite so worked up about it. I mean, I'm not a Liverpool fan, so I don't have to get angry about something like this.
No.
In fact, neither do Liverpool fans, actually. They could be cool about it too. If they rewatch the game, they'll realise the better team won that match.
That's very difficult to ask that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, they won't rewatch the game. And no, well, why would they?
No, of course not. No. Why would they?
It would be extremely painful.
Well, that brings us round onto the next subject, I suppose, talking about Karius and the two, let's call them howlers, that he made for two of the Real Madrid goals. What was your immediate reaction when you saw that first goal?
Oh, I was waiting for the referee to blow the whistle and just go, nah, come on. That's a bollock for it to take the lead in the Champions League final. Come on, let's start again. No, I literally couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
It was really weird. And it was such a, you know, both of those mistakes together, and we'll come on to the other one in a minute. And I'm not saying for a second that the guy is on the take, but I was just thinking, these are such massive mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so blatant, like throwing the ball at someone's foot and then throwing the ball in the net.
Yeah.
Comical, I think, is probably the word I'm looking for. Just to roll it onto the guy's shin and then just kind of watch helplessly as it goes in.
I wonder how long in his head that ball must have taken to cross that line.
It probably still hasn't crossed the line in his world.
Living in this time bubble, it's just like ever so slowly. Like, looking at it, and it's not even rolling anymore.
He's moving around perfectly normally, and this ball's just slowly moving away from him. It's like one of those dreams where you're running and you can't get any further. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. It is that nightmare. I mean, we watched that first goal together, and
just stunned.
Just absolutely stunned. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, I was going to say speechless, but we weren't speechless.
No,
there was no speech we could repeat here. I noticed a couple of minutes earlier, maybe 3 or 4 minutes earlier, Karius rolled the ball out to a Liverpool player, sort of like straight down the middle, quite short. And Real Madrid was still quite high up. And they immediately put him under pressure. I'm afraid I can't remember the player's name. And I'd say maybe 2 or 3 passes later, and maybe 2 or 3 seconds later, they turned the ball over, and it never left the defensive third. And I think that this has been a criticism of Karius all season, is his poor concentration. And he seems to have a problem with poor judgment in terms of distribution. We talked about this last week. We talked about this with Joe Hart about poor distribution. I looked at his passing map, and most of the passes that he played were completed. But, of course, the problem is it's where you play the ball. And it might well have been completed, but, of course, if it leads to a turnover 3 or 4 balls later, that's something that I don't know.
Yeah, it's a hospital pass, then.
Exactly.
Then,
It may well have been completed, but ultimately, if it's doomed to failure, then it's a bad pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not really a complete pass. I mean, more advanced stats will tell you that stuff. But the headline stuff that you just get from StatZone don't tell you that. But clearly this lad has an issue with judgment in terms of his distribution. And that backfired spectacularly badly for him in this game. But I do think also that I think his coach needs to shoulder about 20% of the blame for that. Because if this lad is not very good at distribution, then why are you insisting on playing the ball out from the goalkeeper when your goalkeeper is clearly not suited? If your tactics don't fit your personnel, then you either drop your goalkeeper if you can, which in this case he can't, or you adjust your tactics. So I do think that, I mean, I certainly think that Karius has got all the world of pain that's coming to him, and then he's going to just have to deal with that. But I think it would behoove Liverpool fans to, you know, and certainly the owners there to maybe, you know, have a word with Jurgen Klopp and say, look, are you sure, you know, this is how you want to play? If maybe you should have adjusted your tactics. Maybe you shouldn't have played him. Maybe you should have played somebody else if he can't do the things you're asking him to do. And I think that there's enough evidence leading up to this game to suggest that he isn't that kind of goalkeeper.
Mm. Xhaka Hislop on ESPN looked at the way Karius made the first mistake and the fault he had for the third goal as well. And he was saying that it was the way that he had been prepared for the game. He's since come back and said he doesn't blame Klopp for this at all.
No.
But he said it was the way that Karius had obviously prepared for the game.
Yeah.
Because he was far too eager to get the ball going without taking a time to actually think about what the next play was. He said for the third goal, which he misjudged the shot, he said from how he's looking at Karius, the body shape and the way his feet are, it's almost as if Karius is shaping to take the ball, run forward, and get rid of it again.
Mm. Wow, that's interesting.
He's almost like he's on his starting blocks before he's even got control of the ball.
He's celebrating the goal before he's scored it.
Yeah. His mental state at that time wouldn't have been great. Because,
no, no.
Like, you've had your mistake, and Liverpool equalise within minutes.
Yeah.
That's fine. You're back on.
Yeah, yeah.
On good ground. But as soon as that wonder goal goes in from Bale...
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're back into that dark place again, thinking, right, we're losing because of the first goal.
Of course, yes.
We're constantly playing catch-up here. And also, as well, he can see the game. He knows what team is the better side.
Yeah, he knows.
Very rare do you get a better view of the game than when you're in goal.
Yeah.
Ball does move in the air.
Yeah.
But Hislop thought that that was the real cause of the error that he makes there. It's the fact that
it's a great call. I mean, it's a call that only a goalkeeper could see. I mean, I wouldn't have... seen that for all the world. Although I'm thinking back on it in my head now, and now he's explained it. Yeah,
it does make sense.
It does now. It does make sense completely. Yeah, I think. I mean, I think it's a tragedy for him. I also think that, you know, it's not his fault that Kroos and Modric played an almost flawless game and hardly ever gave the ball away. It's not his fault that Casemiro was on point. It's not his fault that Ramos was outstanding. It's not his fault that Benzema was everywhere, and it's not his fault that Bale was on fire when he came on. And these are the reasons ultimately why Real won that game.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't have made those mistakes, I'm pretty certain that Real would have found a different way to win that match, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, there are forwards that would probably look at two goals from 16 shots and think, I'm all right with that.
Mm.
Bale scored two goals from 16 touches. 16 touches of the ball and he wins the man
smoking
of the match.
Smoking hot, yeah. Smoking hot.
Yeah.
And then she's a come and get me play afterwards.
Yeah.
Well, which is bold as brass.
Yeah, so like, I'm pretty good, me, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous performances I've ever seen.
Mm.
Coming off the bench and just, like, owning the game.
Bringing history with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's pure narrative. I mean, nothing can stop you from.
Yeah, that. Welsh fans have probably seen that from him.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not sure if Real fans have seen much of that from him.
No,
not in the last couple of seasons.
That's what he's capable of.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, he's not been playing. I mean, this is the thing. He's been fit, but they've not been playing.
Yeah,
Zidane doesn't play him.
Yeah, and apparently didn't miss him after the game. If that is true.
Well,
3 hours. Harsh. Yeah, especially when he's just won the game.
Yeah, well,
not single-handedly.
Yeah, I would think that Zidane was too busy with his arm around Ramos, like, you know, just saying, cheers, mate.
Yeah, cheers, mate, because I'm probably recognising that, yeah. Because, I mean, these are the guys that actually win you the match. And certainly, I mean, after Ramos's intervention, I mean, I think Liverpool only had two big chances in the game and they were both by Mo Salah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, Ian King said in his blog post... musing about it, that, you know, Liverpool will need to look within themselves about this. I think that there's the fact that they seemed to, for a good while afterwards, really lose direction after Salah had gone off.
Mm,
yeah. I think is something that they need to look at.
Yeah.
But there's another way of looking about this. Liverpool's journey has been extraordinary to this final.
Yeah.
But you could construct an argument and say they're not the second best club side in Europe. You could construct an argument to say that there are better teams in Europe than Liverpool.
Yeah.
And you could say that they were kind of, they got there under with extreme, I mean, like the way they obliterated City in that like half an hour time, and it's you know, and then again similarly with Roma, but then both of those teams kind of came back, and that actually perhaps, you know, they had reached this point and they should be, should expect to be second favourites. They were, for me they were second favourites to win that game, and that this is perhaps what happens when you get stretched to the absolute limit and there is nothing more for you, and then you lose one key player and that's it, really, you're actually spent.
Yeah.
And Liverpool may be fifth or sixth best team in Europe, but just had a little bit of good fortune or had periods where they were so super effective and were able to, and that was able to get them this far, but not quite enough to win it.
It has been one of the, not criticisms, but it's one of the things that people have pointed out about Liverpool this season, is the fact of is their depth. And how far can they be stretched? And I think it showed in that final that when things aren't going their way, and we're used to seeing Liverpool really have a mad half hour against teams when they really are on point.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also can look very ordinary as well at times.
And can see goals as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although that I know their defence has improved over the last 10, 11 games. But I mean, as a whole, they have it in them. And this competition, the Champions League, they've definitely conceded goals and plenty of.
Yeah, which has made them great to look at.
Yeah.
They've always been a great watch this season, whoever they've been playing.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's against a true side that really knows how to win this cup.
Yeah, who have knocked out the German champions before, and the Italian champions, and PSG as well.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so the French champions,
the
German champions, and the Italian champions on their way to this final.
Yeah.
And then, are we at all surprised that they won this game? No. Are we surprised in the way that they won it? Yes, very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they just showed exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, I think that, you know, Terry said that they'd improved their defence massively of late, and they have, and bringing Van Dijk in there's been brilliant. But he's one man.
Yeah.
So they've got one man at the back, and they've got, you know, one man effectively up front who's doing all the magic, and, you know, that's a lot to rely on. Isn't it? And whereas, you know, we've talked about how good the whole of the Real Madrid team were. I mean, that's a massive gulf in quality. And you're right, they probably are within the top 10 teams in Europe. But, you know, Real are so far ahead of them. You know, it doesn't really do that statistic justice, really. And I think that they're going to have to really spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they need a proper, you know, a rebuild right the way through the spine of it, with proper backup all the way through. Because they can't afford to lose their best player
and then not
have somebody else to...
They are doing that. Yeah. But, I mean, they're not City. They can't just go out and get anybody. They can afford a lot of players, but they can't. I mean, they've got Keita coming, who's a superb player.
Yeah, but then they might be losing Chan as well.
Yes, I think they are losing Chan.
So if you're getting Keita and losing Chan, then...
Yeah.
You're not in the same position.
I mean,
is there an improvement there?
I think there's a massive improvement with Keita over this current iteration of Chan. But Chan's lost form. I think Chan wants to go. I think the feeling is that he's had enough. I don't even think he made it into a Germany squad. I mean,
right.
He's kind of. So, I mean, I would suggest to you that Keita is definitely an upgrade on this current Chan.
Yeah.
If Emre Chan gets back onto form, then it's a different matter. But the likelihood of him doing that at Liverpool is pretty slim, so I think that's probably a decent move. But of course, what you don't have is you don't have the depth.
Yeah.
So when Keita is injured or suspended, and he will be suspended because he likes a red card. And of course, they need to make a decision about their goalkeeper. They need to decide whether or not to support Karius and stick with him and work with him and develop him, or to get rid of him. That's a tough call to make.
Their substitute goalkeeper was Simon Mignolet, someone you're very familiar with.
Yeah.
Now, he's had his troubles at Liverpool as well.
He has.
And there's always been continuous question marks over his performances. But what's your estimation of him as a goalkeeper?
Well, all I can say is when he was at Sunderland, he was amazing. And I can't say that he was without a blooper.
but he was such a fine shot stopper.
Yeah.
He was brilliant, and one of the reasons why we didn't, you know, go down sooner in our 10-year stint up there. I thought he was a great player, and I was really gutted that when he went. But, you know, he got a calling to a bigger club, and off he went. And you're right, has had a real torrid time there, and I think some of the criticism of him has been unfair, I think, at times. Yeah. But when you're at a club like that and the expectation is so high and you make the odd blooper, you know, you are going to get hammered for it, and the press are very keen, and, you know, anybody watching football tends to be quite keen to kind of point out the mistakes you've made and hang you for it, and I think that's what he's suffered. I think there's probably a confidence thing there, and it's going to, and to be honest with you, whoever's between the sticks for Liverpool next season, is they're either going to have to have some kind of massive personality and ego to get over the cloud that's going to hang over whoever's going to be number one for them next season, because the pressure that's going to be on them not to make an error is going to be huge. So whoever that is, I don't envy them.
Yeah.
When Karius was at Mainz, he rarely made any mistakes. I'm sure he did. I didn't massively analyse his performance, but I assume that he would have been playing under Thomas Tuchel, at least for some of that. This is a super micromanaged football team that plays a specific way, and he worked in there. The Premier League is a chaotic league, and Liverpool have a chaotic defence, and I think they perhaps can look back and reflect on their recruitment of goalkeepers and think that they perhaps should have gone for a bigger ego and a more established presence, and maybe spent considerably more money on bringing in, rather than prospects, bringing in really, you know, established goalkeeper who has frankly the ego. If Oliver Kahn makes a mistake like that, he will, or Pete Shilton or Buffon, you know, he won't blame himself. He might grudgingly apologise.
Yeah.
But he will say that he will blame either the referee or say somebody has cheated him out of this. And then that will be that, and he'll just carry on.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine Peter Schmeichel's face.
Yes.
Well, what he would have been
exactly.
like. He would have been shouting at Dennis Irwin, wouldn't
yes.
he?
Yes. And by the end of it, we'd have all been convinced that it was Dennis Irwin's fault.
Yeah.
And Dennis Irwin, being a consummate team player and a professional, would have accepted the responsibility because he understood his role in the team. And I mean, this is possibly where social media is a bit of a curse, because Karius has been, you know, waking up in cold sweats and tweeting how sorry he is. When really what he should be doing is saying, well, I mean, like, it's not my bloody fault that you play too far a high line and that you know, all of it. And it's not my fault that I'm told to release the ball, you know, within a nanosecond of having collected it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if we didn't play rapid transition from the back, then this wouldn't have happened. And you know what? He'd have probably been right.
Yeah.
If his coach had told him, right, you get the ball, give yourself a couple of seconds to check yourself, have a look around you and do that, which is what he'll do from now on, irrespective of what his coach tells him.
Yeah. Because he's going to get pressed harder and harder.
And harder and harder. And so he should be as well. Because if I was an opposition coach, I'd say you stand in that bloke's grill. You get up in that guy's grill as much as you possibly can.
And the grief he's going to get
every
away game, and probably home game, to be fair. But it's certainly in the away games, it's going to be his ear the whole time.
Oh, yeah,
this is what we'll see about what the Kop does next season. Will the Kop give him the bird, or will they actually get behind him and give him the support? Because, I mean, what he needs is, if he's going to be there, he needs his home fans to be on his side.
Yeah.
And to forgive him, and perhaps acknowledge that they were beaten by the better team anyway, and then just get behind this guy, because it's the only way he's ever going to recover from this.
Yeah.
That's assuming that he's given the opportunity. Yeah. I think there's a very good chance that that's his last
ever. And of course, people know as well that you know, if you target one player, you target the whole team.
Yeah.
If you start the season with a toxic atmosphere like that,
you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve.
And really, I mean, Liverpool are the sort of clubs that start seasons ultra, ultra optimistic anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the amount of money that goes on Liverpool to win the title every season.
One month from now, they will be convincing themselves that they're going to win the league.
Yeah.
And it should be, because that's what we want from our Liverpool fans.
Exactly.
All of our Liverpool supporting friends are all like that, and it's great that they love that.
Yes.
I love that unbridled, foolish optimism.
Yeah, because if they weren't, we then we'd start worrying.
When we'd be worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we think we're not too worried about what the atmosphere is going to be like at Anfield at the start of next season, because it'll all be foolish. Yeah. You don't tell them how many finals Klopp's lost in a row now.
No, you don't. No, that's his foolish loser talk.
foolish loser talk. But no one's interested in. Let's talk some more about losers then, and go through the playoff finals this week very quickly. Fulham Villa, I suppose, really.
A bit surprised about that.
Yeah.
I just thought that Villa being, I don't know why, Bruce, I think,
yeah,
and that they're a bit, and I thought they'd be in their faces, and Fulham, I don't know, again, Fulham, you think, Fulham. Villa a bit Villa.
Yeah.
And actually, it wasn't that way at all. I mean, I didn't really watch much of this game. It was on, but we were,
drinking gin.
We were drinking gin, so can't say too much. I didn't have the benefit of a replay. great. Great for Fulham, and great for the London Jags as well.
That is another thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were going to talk about this last week, weren't we, about the whole sale of Wembley. And because these playoff finals might become a thing of the past, mightn't they?
Well, I would assume that they'll do a deal to make certain that these games can still be played in Wembley. I'm sure that if this sale ever goes through, then the FA Cup, League Cup, and I would imagine even probably all the England internationals will still be there, or I'd like to see actually the England internationals go back round the country again. Yeah. But I imagine
that was quite good, wasn't it, when they did that?
Well,
when
they went to your place, it was wicked, wasn't it?
Oh,
it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant. Because it's a national team, and we're a funny-shaped country.
Yeah.
You can't get to London that quickly if you're at the top or in the West. So if you just if you scooted around a bit, I think that was brilliant. It's a great thing to do. It actually made you feel a bit more English, if I'm honest with you, and not rather than it just being like a team in the south.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's fair. That's completely fair. Yeah. I didn't get to go to any of the games outside. In fact, I've never been to an England game in my life. What am I saying? But I mean, I certainly, I applauded the notion. I thought it was great when they went to St James's Park and to Stadium of Light and Old Trafford and all of that. I thought it was brilliant. I would love to see that again.
Yeah.
But I imagine that an arrangement will be made whereby the FA will still call it in terms of the England team and in terms of the showpiece events.
Yeah.
But the EFL will have to do a deal with that. But you know what? Maybe would it be a bad thing if they moved the playoff final to Old Trafford? Would it be a bad thing?
No, not at all.
I mean, you know.
Well, the thing is will it be moved to Old Trafford, or will it be moved to, I don't know, Shanghai or Dubai?
Yeah. That would be interesting. I think that there'd be absolute outrage, particularly from the fans who would not be able to go to those games.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. But I mean, like the Millennium Stadium wouldn't be a bad shout.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I mean, I know it's the English Football League, but I mean, you know, there's nothing to stop them from. It's the same landmass. There's nothing to stop them from going to these other places. In fact, it might be quite a nice day out. It would be a nice day. I know, I mean, we've done that Cardiff trip for the playoff final. It's a challenging trip. But, you know, or even, dare I say, Hampden. That would be a pretty extraordinary thing.
That would
have the EFL playoff finals up
quite at Hampden. Extraordinary, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The Aviva.
Or the Aviva, wow, man, that would be some trip, that. Yeah, you see, so I think either way you look at it, I think it's fine. Those games will still get played somewhere.
Yeah. And people will still go and see them.
Yeah, and they'll still find a way of extracting as much money from the supporters as they possibly can as well. Yeah. So don't worry, folks, your money is not safe.
And Coventry have gone up as well.
Yes, Coventry.
Yeah, that's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, great news.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, yes, as you said earlier, they've suffered enough, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, there were a time when they were stinking the place out of the bottom end of that Premier League, and they were getting on other teams' nerves by just not doing anything apart from avoiding relegation. But yeah, now I think they really have suffered enough. Their problems aren't over because they apparently have terrible owners and, you know, they're in a bad way. But, you know, they've got Mark McNulty, hopefully, for next year.
Yeah,
and
he's scoring for fun.
Keep him, and he's scoring and assisting for fun, and fantastic, good for them.
And Rotherham have gone back to the Championship.
That's right. Yeah. Of which I have no opinion.
Yes, hopefully they'll have a better season than they did the last time they were in the Championship, because they struggled quite a bit.
Yeah, let's. Yeah,
hopefully
hope
they're
so.
a bit better prepared for it this time. But yeah, talking about dodgy owners, Sunderland have had some good news, haven't they?
They have. So about 2 weeks ago. they exchanged, like they moved house.
And they got the keys.
Got the keys, and Ellis was like, you know, he's probably left them a little bottle of champagne in the corner.
Yeah.
And said, you know, hope you enjoy this place as much as I didn't. And oh, Stuart Donald was going, isn't that lovely?
By the way, the boiler doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit iffy. All you have to do is give it a tap on the side with a hammer, and it'll be fine.
I thought I had a spare key for the garage, but I didn't. So there's just this one. I'm really sorry. But yeah, Stuart Donald's turned up, and to say that he's injected some optimism into the fans and probably the whole area, I think would be an understatement. I thought his press conference that he did when he turned up was just full of positivity, and there's a brilliant, brilliant interview on the Roker Report podcast with him. Fascinating insight into how a takeover or a buyout works and what they're planning to do with it. And it was just interesting the way that they've clearly got a plan in their head. They know what was done badly, and then they've got an idea, a very clear idea about what they want to do going forward, which sounded brilliant. And they extended the end of the discount period for the season tickets for next season, because he said, I want to get 20,000 season tickets. And he's got it from whatever it was up to 17,000 within a few days. So that is, I think, a clear indicator of the optimism that's sweeping through it. But some of the really cool things that I've heard him say is one of the first questions he was asked on that podcast, and I think by journalists before that as well, is, what are you going to do with pink seats? What are you going to do with those pink seats?
These sun-bleached seats.
And he went, well, I think we've got other priorities to look at first. Like, you know, we've got to overhaul the entire playing staff, and, you know, we've got to do things. And but what he did say was, well, look, if I could do it, I'd be going, well, look, you know, we're not that flush. We've got no debt now, and yes, we're going to have a really good transfer budget, probably the best one in the division for next season. But he said, what I'd really like to do is just, if you know, get the fans to come down. I'll put on like a barbecue and put some beers on, and we all change the seats together. Mm. Which will probably never happen because, you know,
health and safety,
which is what he said. But mind you, he's from an insurance background, so I'm sure he'd find a way around that.
Oh, yeah, he'd definitely say that, wouldn't he?
But that just shows the kind of, you know, he wants to get the Sunderland population back engaged with their club. And I thought it was a great idea. I know it would probably never happen, but that's the kind of mentality that he's bringing to it. And I just think it's going to be, well, I hope he gets it right, because he certainly started in the right frame of mind, I think.
Good news. Yeah.
And Jack Ross?
Yes, Jack Ross from St Mirren, who did some great stuff up there. I think we were talking before this, and he'd saved them from relegation. He left as they got promoted to the Premier League. So a bold move for him. But it does make me think about the last time that we got relegated down there. So it was just at the end of the god-awful Laurie McMenemy era. We went down to the third tier, and we got Dennis Smith from York City. Yeah. And no one, you know, he wasn't pulling up any trees down there. And he came to Sunderland and really reinvigorated them and took them back up,
all the way up
and down and then back up again. He's a grand old Duke of York. Yeah. But I think it, you know, it sounds like he's high profile enough to be able to do something. It sounds like he's talented enough to be able to do something. And he's gone into this with his eyes open, because he's seen what's happened before. Mm-hmm. But actually, probably of all the appointments that Sunderland have made over the many years that we've been stinking the place out in the Premier League, I think this feels like probably a good one, because he's come there with new owners, with the fresh ideas and new mentality and a bit of positivity and optimism. So I wish him all the best.
The other thing that I took away from that podcast, I listened to that podcast, was the fact that they managed to keep hold of their Cat 1 status for their academy.
Yes.
Which I think is essential, because if they do have, they have ambitions to, they want to ape Borussia Dortmund in terms of the sort of overall success of the club, drawing on a number of parallels with Dortmund. But one of the secrets of one of the reasons why Dortmund have been as successful as they have been is their academy, obviously, and their facilities and their ability to attract the top young players. I think if so, in England, you need to have a Category 1 academy in order to do that. So that they need really to prioritise that. They could do with spending as much money as they can on getting that going, because then in 5-6 years, you know, they will definitely reap the benefits of that. And hopefully Sunderland will be, you know, if not back in the Premier League, then certainly a stable and decent Championship club by that point. And if not sooner, there's no reason to suggest, I'm not suggesting that they can't, just after the terrible time that they've had, I think it would be extraordinary if they were to suddenly just go all the way back up again. But you never know.
Well, it'd be nice if it did happen, but as long as we don't have a third consecutive relegation, I think we'll see the season has been a massive success.
What also struck me about that was their attitude was to sort of like saying, well, we were being asked when are we going to be back in the Premier League again. And the thing is, the point is, you know, this is we are in League One. League One is a competition all of itself.
Yes,
it's a tough league, and we are in it.
Yeah.
And so we have to do well in this competition before we even think about anything else. Yeah. And I think that if that's the attitude, then I think that certainly stands them in good stead. There are, you know, there are owners who are aware, who are self-aware enough to be able to know where they are and just how difficult it's going to be to get back out of this league. Now, yes, biggest playing budget in the league by a street. Unless they're really badly managed, they should just by osmosis
just
float back up into the Championship. But that's a poor metaphor because it still has to be done.
Mm. Yeah. But I think on that category one states, I mean, we've brought some good young players through. Towards the end of last season, they were getting a lot more playing time because I think the thought was, well, we're gone anyway, and certainly that was confirmed with many games to go in the season. But it'll be good to... I think it's time that we probably take an axe to the playing staff, not quite literally, obviously, metaphorically, and cut down some of the dead wood. I mean, obviously, Rodwell's an obvious exit that's going to have to happen, but I think Catamol and Kone and McGreedy, I think they're all players that maybe kind of were hanging around at Sunderland, maybe because the expectation was, look, if you can just scrape through, that's kind of all right, and we pay you quite well. So it'll be good maybe to the new level that we find ourselves in to see what the kids can do instead of going out on loan. They can actually do it for their home club and maybe crack on at that level.
These are truly the end of days when someone on this podcast is arguing that Lee Catamol has to go.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, this is how far it's gone.
I'm coming out on it.
Do you remember when that guy made it into our favourite 11?
Yeah, our Premier League.
And now he's gone. He's toast.
Yeah, well, toast. I think his decline has been quite evident for the last couple of seasons. More so the season just gone. Where it just didn't feel like he was at the races really, and considering the amount of fire that used to be in that guy's belly,
it's a sad decline.
It is sad to see that happen. Mm. But I think you've got to cut it and move on. I think.
Yeah,
you've ruined my ending, by the way.
Have I?
Yeah, you've both ruined my ending because I was coming up with a good ending because you were all being positive and now you're being negative again.
Oh, sorry.
You see, because now I was going to bring it up and say about all about the thing, about everything was going to be all right.
It's time that Sunderland got rid of the dead wood.
And that's a good thing. That's a positive thing.
Yeah.
Over to you, Mr. Positive Post-person.
Well, I was just saying, but this is how seasons should end. They should end on a positive note. They should end, even if you haven't done well or if you've been relegated, you've lost a final, you should be able to look at next season and think, actually, by the time next season starts, I'm going to be in a good place and I'm going to be in a place where I'm thinking, yeah, come on, this is going to be so much better than last year. It can't be any worse, can it? As I said, this is the last regular one for the season, but we will be back very, very, very soon. We're actually going to go to two UEFA World Cup games next weekend, aren't we?
Yes.
But for this season anyway, with summer specials coming up very, very soon, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Dalton, and from Terry Fellon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball. So we're going to talk a bit about the Champions League final.
Yeah, we should have some blistering Champions League final talks.
Everyone else is talking about it. It's a bit about Sunderland. And a bit about the playoffs.
Yeah, why not? Bit of Coventry.
I didn't see anything but the last 2 minutes of Coventry today because I was driving back.
It was a typical League Two football match. Yeah. Not much to see.
Yeah, some cracking goals.
Some cracking goals, in fairness. Yeah.
Really nice goals.
Yeah.
Lots of cutting inside, getting onto your good foot.
What was the name of that fella? Mark McNulty, wasn't it?
Yes. He's had a hand in lots of goals.
38 goals.
39, did you correct
it? Yeah, 39 goals. It was 38 at the time, and then later in the game it was 39. So these are either assists or goals he scored himself across the whole season. Coventry player.
Wow.
Yeah, indeed. He won't be playing for Coventry next season.
Yeah.
Mark McNulty is a Scottish professional football player.
It's like he's in the room.
It is.
He's 25, so...
He's been around, isn't
he? He's been around, formerly of Celtic, Hibernian, Livingston, and then Coventry. He must have lost his way, presumably, and has now found it.
We'll be tearing up League One next season.
We're looking with interest to him. We're interested to see whether or not our Championship club swoops for him, has a punt on him.
Yes, or maybe another League One side will.
Yeah, maybe one of them. Are there any rich League One side? Oh, hang on, though.
New moneyed ones.
I wonder.
With some parachute payments just burning a hole in their pockets.
We could totally be recording this.
Yes, we can. And that's a
Did someone
better.
Say money? Just put it over there with the rest.
We have all the money.
Flush under.